How long had you been in command when the bomb came?
18 months. But I could I make just make a point?
Yeah.
From the day that I arrived, I had lobbied my headquarters, which was in Portsmouth, for more defences against people coming in.
What, men and materiel?
Oh, yes, definitely. And I was told no. We were too far out on a limb, and indeed that's why the barracks closed down in 96. They decided to move the School of Music down to Portsmouth, which is totally logical. But no, I got no support at all. And I was really depressed by it. I mean, it was really appalling.
Well, we get to the 22nd of September 1989. Can you talk me through how, for you, that day panned out?
My normal routine in the morning in those days was I had two golden retrievers, and I would leave home at Zeebrugge House at about 7 o'clock and go through South Barracks and then across the road to where the playing fields were. Then my normal routine again would be then to go back up to the office at about 8 o'clock and start the day's work, take the dogs up with me. And that morning, when the bomb went off, I knew exactly what the hell it was, because I had been in Northern Ireland too many times not to recognise an explosion. So I made sure that everybody who was available scooted over to South Barracks to help out where they could. Our problem was that the ruddy building that they had decided to blow up was a 1950s structure with breeze block walls and a hugely overweighted roof, which once the walls were blown out just collapsed. And that's where an awful lot of the guys were hurt. We pulled out those we could, and I thought, well, Christ almighty, I've got to get back to my office, because we'd already alerted the emergency services, police, ambulance and fire, but you need somebody there to take messages or phone calls and so on and so forth. Eventually, we set up a very good telephone exchange, and so many volunteers came and helped. It was astonishing. Trish came in and picked up the dogs and took them back home. She was supposed to be working, but the alas came back in, and we'd set up one of the rooms as a phone centre, and Trisha organised that, and she was absolutely brilliant. And then we started inevitably to get friends and relatives coming in. So I opened up the sergeant's mess and told them to get organised, because they were going to have a lot of people in, and with the big rooms that they had in there, it was so much more simple to use that. And Trisha organised it. She was quite outstanding. That's why she got an MRE. I mean, really good. And then just sort of managed from there on.
Were you bombarded with queries? And did you sort of take these on your bat to answer, or did you appoint somebody?
I looked after all of them myself, because everybody else was really highly involved. I mean, we had the tiniest of staffs, and there really wasn't anybody who could do any more. No, my telephone was red hot, but we had a delightful telephone operator who acted as a filter. He was really brilliant, and only anything of importance, i.e. from the emergency services or perhaps from one of the relatives, actually came through to me.
How quickly did you realise there were fatalities?
3 minutes later.
So by the time this phone is going and relatives are coming in, you're beginning to be able to give situation report?
No, because I simply didn't know who was killed or who was wounded. That came after they'd removed the rubble and so on and so forth. So it wasn't until at least midday that I had an idea of who was hurt.
And what sort of reaction were you getting from military higher command up the line?
I was left to get on with it.
which is just as well, I always feel, in these circumstances.
Yeah, and you wouldn't want the hierarchy hanging about, because they would ask questions that you wouldn't know the answers to.
You mentioned the host of volunteers. Were these both military and civilian, or?
Oh, both. Yeah. But mostly the people of Deal. I mean, they were absolutely wonderful.
Were you impressed by the speed of reaction of the emergency service?
Oh, yes. They were here within minutes and working extremely hard. The policeman just ousted the local security firm. The ambulance people were wonderful, both male and female, and they were superb, and got everybody down to Deal Hospital initially for their examination and a manager. Maureen was wonderful, and she graded them and then sent them off to other hospitals elsewhere. And the fire service were quite outstanding. They eventually jacked up the roof of the practice room and dragged out several hurt chaps who subsequently recovered, which was great. But they were quite outstanding again. And then we had a huge crane, which was basically to lift that piece of roof out of the way and clear the area.
Did you form a joint headquarters, a little sort of operating team of you, police, fire, and to make decisions? Or
no, we didn't, actually. It just sort of seemed to work. All of us sort of trotted around the area. I mean, once the initial casualties had been removed, there was very little else to do in terms of policing or firing or whatever.
So was your problem then mainly the media? Mm. I heard some story of a gantry where the media sort of went up and looked down. Can you remember that?
I remember it. Where it came from or where it was located, I'm not certain. There was certainly a structure where they mounted their TV cameras and got the whole thing going. But I ignored it, because let them get on with what they want to do, what they want to report.